motherfucking K, homeboy. A to the motherfucking K. A to the motherfucking K, homeboy. A to the motherfucking K. Right, so to add a bit more levity to the show, we'll move on to segment three, which is the most ridiculous or crazy storylines or angles we've ever seen. So, Carl, I feel like I've been talking a lot in the Ringside Report, so do you want to start with yours?
Yeah, let's do it. So, yeah, I was trying to cast my mind back, and I think, as we said at the top of the show, there's so many fucking crazy things and ridiculous angles that we've seen over the years. I don't know whether this list is going to be a comprehensive enough list, to be fair, to cover it all, but the ones that kind of jumped out to me, and again, they're not in any particular order here, but the first one I could think of that I just thought was mental at the time was the love triangle / love square / pregnancy marriage thing with Kane, Matt Hardy, Snitsky and Lita. So
yeah, that was chaos. That was crazy.
I remember this angle going on for like way longer than it needed to, but basically at some point during the clusterfuck that was, you know, everything going on with Lita at the time. So she was still with Matt and kayfabe, but for whatever reason Kane was pursuing Lita.
And as we know, when Kane wants you, you pretty much can't argue with him.
Exactly.
Oh, that's what the storyline told us.
Yeah, so, you know, weird shenanigans are happening there in the background. And, you know, Matt Hardy's coming out and getting his ass kicked by Kane because he's like, well, what are you doing? Like, trying to steal me bed, blah, 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 blah. Then, out of nowhere, she kind of comes out and announces that she's pregnant. So, okay, this has then kind of led Matt Hardy to, you know, propose to Lita to kind of, you know, lock her down. She's going to have his baby. But then out comes Kane, who announces that the baby's actually his. Dun, so Kane's dun, now dun. The Kane's the baby daddy, apparently.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm assuming that, as I recall, that had no build-up at all. There was no suggestion that Lita was interested in him.
Oh, God, no. She'd been, like, fending him off because he's been, like, this crazy psychopath and, like, stalker almost, trying to chase her down and pursue her for weeks. So it's just, we're just like, okay, how did that happen? Then that obviously, of course, it leads into a Death Doers Part match between Matt Hardy and Kane. And, you know, this is where they could have just ended it all. They could have had Matt Hardy beat Kane, they all live happily ever after, they go away, have the baby, job done. However, Kane wins the match. So that now means that, you know, the stipulation of the match is Lita would have to marry whoever wins the match. So now she has to marry her apparent rapist, I guess.
So, home syndrome then.
Yeah. So, very, very weird times watching this unfold. And then, obviously, there was a character at the time called Gene Snitsky, who was...
Good old Gene.
He was quite a newish guy to the roster.
Despite the name, he was a big fella.
He was.
I know you hear the name Gene and don't think much of a wrestler, but he was a big guy.
He was a very big guy. And he was apparently having a match with Kane one night, and he ends up hitting him with a chair, which causes him to fall on top of Lita. And thus, she has a miscarriage because, you know...
We're a soap opera now.
Exactly.
To be fair, it wasn't Snitsky's fault.
Well, exactly. So, of course, this is where it gets even more fucking crazy. So, not only is Lita coming out to the ring with Kane now, like being by his side and whatever, she's now apparently really upset by this demon baby that she had that she's now lost, even though she was apparently, it's just fucking weird as fuck, basically. But Snitsky then kind of comes out and they turn it into part of his gimmick. So, you know, he comes out going, "It wasn't my fault." And
as I recall, they went so far into this that his theme music actually started with that catchphrase.
Yes.
They loved this gimmick.
Yes. But a particular highlight for this and the moment which stands out the most throughout this whole fucking series of craziness was a particular scene where Gene Snitsky's in the ring with a baby, and you know, this is after Lita's just lost hers, and he's holding this baby in the ring, and then he throws the baby in the air, and Punk kicks it into the fucking audience and kicks it flying. Obviously, it was not a real baby. Please don't try this at home. but yeah, that's just a moment which is kind of burnt into my brain of the crazy times that was that era of wrestling.
Yeah, like someone signed off on that.
Exactly.
Like, I know it ended up like it wasn't a real baby, like you say, it was actually Hornswoggle, but even so.
Well, fucking hell, we'll come on to him in a bit as well.
I just want to clarify for everyone, it wasn't Hornswoggle.
To be honest, we probably could have done...
It's only a minor thing, but I'm right in saying he actually came down with a baby in the carriage as well, like walking down with the baby carriage.
Yeah, he came down with this little baby in the carriage, brought it into the ring in this little swaddle, and then fucking Punk kicked it into the audience.
Because nothing says it wasn't my fault, like Punk kicking a baby doll into an audience.
Exactly right. You know, obviously we all had sympathy for him after this.
Of course.
So yeah, that was the fucking weirdness. That is my first choice. Second on the list was when Dawn Marie decided she was going to marry Tori Wilson's dad.
I totally forgot about this one.
So at some point, and for some reason, Dawn Marie had hatched a plan to marry Tori Wilson's dad, because apparently she was a gold digger. Which is surprising, because since when the fuck did Tori Wilson's dad have any money? So, okay.
Yeah.
Fair play.
Sure. I mean, so you imagine if you're a gold digger and you're working in WWE and you know Vince McMahon and what he's like, that's where you go digging for gold. But okay, exactly. Tori Wilson's dad. Cool.
I mean, makes so much sense, right? So she basically hatches this plan that, you know, she's going to end up marrying Tori Wilson's dad and going to basically steal all his money. So all this is kind of happening while Al, who is Tori Wilson's dad, by the way,
not Al Snow,
surprisingly, although, you know, who knows, he probably wasn't involved in this segment at some point. But so, you know, Tori and Dawn Marie are kind of catfighting over all this, and Al's getting in between them, trying not to pick sides, yada, yada, yada. But then all kind of comes to a head when the marriage actually does happen. And then the way that Dawn Marie basically suggests she's going to get his money is she's literally going to fuck him to death on their honeymoon. And surprise, surprise, this is what happens. So we get to see that Dawn Marie and Al Wilson have gone to the honeymoon suite. And then you get to see, you know, we cut back later on that night and you can see that Al is looking a little bit worse for wear while Dawn Marie's saying, should we do it again? And he's like, okay. And then before you know it, he's dead. She's literally shagged him to death. So,
bravo. Okay.
Yeah, and bravo, right?
I imagine the when they found the body, he had a massive fucking grin on his face.
Well, weirdly, he was face down. So I don't know what kind of stuff they were doing. You know, best not to ask questions. But that is not where the story ends. So next, what happens is obviously they go to his funeral, right? And it's an open casket, as you do. So he might have had a smile on his face in this bit, actually. But I don't recall. So, you know, Dawn Marie's there playing the grieving widow, because obviously she still wants to get his money at this point. And then Tori Wilson turns up and, you know, Dawn Marie says that she, you know, he never loved her, blah, blah, blah. She was a terrible daughter, this, that, the other. And they start having a little bit of a fight, you know, in front of Tori's dead dad. And then she gets a little bit of an upper hand. Dawn Marie kind of goes off the screen and Tori Wilson's kind of grieving, like looking over the open casket. And then the whole kind of segment ends where Dawn Marie twats Tori Wilson over the head with a plant pot and smashes it.
Yeah.
And then we don't know what happened after that. So we can only assume Dawn Marie got all the money and then went on to slaughter many other old men via various bedroom
acts. As far as kayfabe is concerned, Dawn Marie is still Tori Wilson's stepmom.
I mean, as far as I know.
I mean, that's a hell of a family.
Well, exactly. So, yeah. Very strange.
Cool. Yeah, yeah.
Very strange. So the next one, I've mentioned this guy before, but that's just because of the craziness that it was, is my old pal, the Gobbledygooker.
Ah, the Gobbledygooker. I remember you educating me on the Gobbledygooker. What a fucking craziness.
Honest to God, right? And this is my example of why Vince McMahon is as fucking out of touch, right? So this whole idea was Vince's idea. So what it was it was good shit. What we started to see on the weekly episodic series, I don't know what it was called at the time. It was before the likes of Raw and this kind of thing. It was like, I don't think it was even Saturday Night's Main Event. They just had a weekly show. And we started seeing this egg. And there's all this kind of speculation each week saying what's inside the egg. And everyone thought it was going to be some sort of fucking superstar, like being revealed and stuff like that. People thought it could have been Ric Flair at one point. There was even rumors, because this is before an Undertaker had debuted, that this was how the Undertaker was going to debut.
I honestly can't think of a result that I would be happy with of what's inside the egg.
Exactly, like, right? But the speculation, like, it wasn't like they just brought it up once or twice. This was getting some serious kind of TV time. And so everyone kind of thought this is going to be some sort of big deal. And then it kind of comes all the way up to the Survivor Series pay-per-view that year. Can't remember even what year it was. It must have been like 1998, something like that. And yeah, it kind of all goes up to here. And then on the Survivor Series pay-per-view, that's when the egg starts to hatch. And as you can imagine, what steps out is this giant feathered fucking bird thing. And the crowd all instantly start booing, like louder than you've ever heard in your life. Fun fact for you, inside that costume was actually Hector Guerrero.
Really?
So, yeah. So one of the Guerrero family, who is a fucking fantastic wrestler, is now the Gobbledygooker. And
I'm sure that's it's one of the highlights of their career.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. And yeah, that was just it. He kind of came out once and he was just never seen again. So apparently, there was never a plan to do anything else other than this. This was always what they were going to do. And
bollocks. I think apparently Vince was going to love it.
Well, he did. So what Vince thought apparently was that the type of bird it was or something meant that it couldn't be pinned because it doesn't have a back. Or something. What? So he thought it was genius, apparently. Honestly, this guy's fucking crazy. But
and I just want to remind people at this point, this man has gone on to advise President Trump.
Exactly. So we ended up getting this fucking Gobbledygooker thing. I think I remember hearing in a Bruce Pritchard interview a couple of years like later, he said something along the lines of they wanted to have use him as a mascot, like to kind of get the fans kind of hyped up and start like fucking chants and shit. But you know, the fact that he got booed out the building and all the build and stuff that happened with it, he just basically, that was the last we ever saw of him after weeks and weeks and weeks of build.
That's insane. I mean, I think he's long overdue a return to WWE. Well,
I mean, better time, you know, there's no better time than present, is there? Let's be fair.
True.
Can't make a 3-hour Raw or a fucking SmackDown any worse, can it? So.
Well, exactly. I mean, they could just give him the last half an hour of Raw.
Let's do it. Yeah. And then another one, a much more recent example, is the anonymous Raw general manager.
Yeah.
I fucking hated this. It went on forever. Right. To be honest,
I didn't mind because I don't know if it was before or after the anonymous Raw GM, but I didn't mind when they had like random guest GMs. That was okay. It was a bit stupid, but it was okay. But yeah, I totally agree with you on this. It was ridiculous.
I don't like Michael Cole the best of times, but I can't stand to even hear him on commentary now from this whole fucking angle, because every week of him going, "Can I have your attention, please?" And the whole, I don't know, the whole thing just went on for so long. You know, you could have done a million different cool things with it. Like, it could have been anyone. It could have been Austin. It could have been fucking Mick Foley. You know what I mean? It could have been someone, a returning superstar. It could have been fucking anything, right?
You know what they could have done with it as well? Like, had it so that it wasn't an anonymous GM. We were the GM.
Exactly.
Because remember how, I think it was Taboo Tuesday, where they actually let you vote on what matches you want? That was actually not too bad a gimmick, and they kind of just abandoned it, I think probably because we were putting people in storylines that they didn't want. But yeah, even something like that would have worked for me, where it's like, well, we get to vote, even if they limit your options, you know, and they don't let you create feuds out of nowhere, but they let you decide what match they're having, or, you know, something like that. But yeah, just this mystery. Did they ever reveal who it was?
They did, yeah. Which, to be fair, it would have been better if they just didn't fucking reveal who it was, but obviously it was Hornswoggle. Of course it was.
God.
Yeah, fucking so out. I feel like we probably could have done a fucking worst 10 fucking angles based just around Hornswoggle, to be perfectly honest.
He's been involved in a surprising amount of bad angles. It's almost as if a man named Hornswoggle might not be the best character in wrestling.
Yeah, imagine. Yeah, fucking hell. After all that, there was the turn out to be Hornswoggle, and then just, I don't know, it was just awful. I think the point you made there, where it could have just been the audience, like, how sick would that have been? I think with that Taboo Tuesday, and I think they did like a Cyber Sunday or something as well, didn't they?
Yeah.
They did stuff like that, which was probably really ahead of its time. You know, I'd love to see something like that make a return now.
I think the facility is better now, because they were doing that back before, like, Facebook and stuff were massive.
You
could easily put the voting out there onto social media or whatever capacity they wanted. It's so much easier to do now to have that involvement. It's like, and not to digress too much, but like, they are struggling with the lack of audience now, and no one's trying to do anything creative about it. Like, WWE are suggesting that they might be going live again, right? Mm. I don't know how true it's going to be, but they might be doing some live tapings again. So if you're doing live tapings, but it's still to an empty arena, right, and I know they're not going to do it, but why not have screens up where people can post their reactions?
Yeah,
like actually in the arena, where the you could be in like a box essentially, because the audience area is there but empty. Why not put some screens up on the edge? Let the wrestlers see the reaction from people at home watching it. Are they going to do it? No, but still.
Yeah, I think that'd be a pretty sick idea. To be fair.
Thanks. but yeah, just I don't know the. They were very ahead of the time with that, but then they abandoned it, and sadly, that's what we're stuck with. I pulled you away from your topic there, mate. Sorry.
No, I feel really interested in this topic actually. maybe there should be one for a future thing. How we could have dealt with these times in more creative ways.
But, I like it. I think we could probably even do that for next week if you wanted. Well, it's still relevant.
Yeah, definitely. And then the last one on my list was, I don't know if you remember these fucking random little vignettes, but it was the Tim White suicide attempts.
I don't remember this at all, so this is going to be an education for me.
Jesus Christ. So basically, every week on SmackDown, I think it was, Josh Matthews was following Tim White, who's a former referee, around in all these various different places as he attempted to commit suicide in all these mad ways.
Okay.
And there was, why? There was, who knows? Literally, who knows?
What happened?
I don't know. And literally, like, every week, they just got fucking zanier and zanier to the point. I can't even remember. It wasn't even memorable. It was just awful. It just made zero sense at all. And you just had Josh Matthews going around, going, no, no, don't do it. Don't do it. And they'd be like, fucking, you'd see blood splattering everywhere and stuff. And, like, Josh Matthews would be covering his face. And then next week, he's there trying to kill himself again. So it's like, well, did he just kill someone else? Is he now a serial killer?
Have they been watching South Park?
I have no idea, honestly. I just
oh my god, they killed Tim White.
Literally, like, every week there was a different thing, and they were more like stupid each week that they did it.
That's insane. I honestly don't remember that.
I'd say look it up, but I don't even want to suggest you go through the pain, to be fair. But yeah, awful times.
Yeah.
So they were five things that stood out to me as just WTF angles that they've done.
I think they're a solid five. Mine probably aren't going to be as good or as detailed, but I'm going to do them anyway, Cal. I'm going to start with, if I had to put one at the top, it might be this, just for how fucking weird it was. It's probably up there with, funnily enough, it involves Kane again, but it's probably up there with the whole baby punt kick thing. In that, I mentioned the name Katie Vick, and you know what I mean.
It's probably the weirdest one of all time.
Weirdest one. So this, I believe it stemmed from Triple H and his cronies' obsession. It was a time that, were they in Evolution at the time? I feel like they might have been.
Maybe.
Or it was Kane and Friends. It was Triple H and Friends, anyway. And they were obsessed with making Kane take his mask off. And this is originally how it started out, because ultimately, I think he lost a match and had to take his mask off. And then it was revealed that he's not that scarred. He's just a bit fucked up in the end. And then they sort of, I can't even remember quite how they found this information out about them, but they realised Kane was a bit fucked up in the head, and Triple H had found out some information about his, I want to say prom date, Katie Vick. Mm. And basically what the suggestion, story-wise, was that the detail that Triple H went into was that she met an untimely demise by accident, and Kane proceeded to make love to her anyway. You know, yeah. Don't want to ruin a good prom night. And to top it off, and this is what makes it so much more cringe and so much more ridiculous, is Triple H, in almost a DX kind of fashion, does a little bit of a skit in which he proceeds to make love to I hope was a fucking fake mannequin in a coffin in this skit of being Kane making love with Katie Vick, which was so the idea, the concept that they put to you that Kane did that was pretty fucked up anyway. But then to have Triple H emulate it was just even more beyond fucked up. And it's one of them storylines where you go, how was this ever signed off as an idea? You know, necrophilia, that's a winning story right there.
It was, I remember it being graphic as well. Like, I remember him pulling like pieces of fucking flesh up and like looking at it and stuff. Like, I just remember thinking at the time, what is going on here? Is this?
It's one of them scenes where the skit went on probably way too long, but the whole story, the whole idea was just kind of really weird. And this was really the point that they kind of ruined Kane, because they made it so that he was never truly horrifically burnt, which is kind of weird because Undertaker was under the belief that he horrifically burnt him as well. But they just made it so, it turns out he's just a bit of a fucked up mental patient. And that didn't sell as well as the Big Red Machine, I'll be honest. So to me, that's kind of when they fucked Kane up as a character. And, you know, they sort of tried to ignore that for a while, and then he went to, like, Kane, who doesn't wear the mask but was still a big guy. And, yeah, I think they kind of... That's when the Big Red Machine died, to be honest. It was around this kind of shit.
Yeah, this was one of the worst ones ever of an angle. It was just ridiculous.
Yeah, the one little bit of a good mention I want to give it is when it's stupid, but I do love the fact that they brought it back up, was when he had to do anger management with Daniel Bryan when they were Team Hell No, and they're in that group therapy session, and they ask Kane about his past, and he goes through, like, you don't get to see it all, but he goes through everything, but there's a brief mention of Katie Vick as well. And it just cuts to the entire room looking horrified at Kane's sort of illustrious history of, like, being burnt alive with his family in his house and all this Katie Vick stuff and so on. That's one bit where it kind of tickled me that it was brought back up, because they almost acknowledge how silly it was as a story. But I thought I'd give that a quick mention. The next one for me was, do you remember, Carl, Vince McMahon having an illegitimate son?
Unfortunately.
Do you remember who that illegitimate son was?
Unfortunately.
It was none other than Hornswoggle. Yeah,
of course it was.
And this is one of them where you go, all right, we're using Hornswoggle again. And I swear to God, he was there just for that ridiculous payoff. You know, mm-hmm. It was like, how silly would it be for it to end up being Hornswoggle? Now, I believe this was some sort of like Heir to the Throne kind of deal, wasn't it? But they didn't actually go anywhere with it. I don't know if it was similar to the Gobbledygooker where they went, oh, this is fucking stupid, so we're just going to let this die. But
they did actually have a plan originally.
Oh, did they? Okay.
So
gale me.
The original plan was going to be that, you know, it's Vincent Kennedy McMahon, and it was going to be Mr. Kennedy.
Oh, right. So they didn't have a plan going forward with Hornswoggle, but it was never meant
to
be Hornswoggle. I get you.
No. So basically, there was going to be this, Vince has got an illegitimate son, and it was always going to be Mr. Kennedy, and it was going to go on to, similar to like the EC3 gimmick that they did in TNA, it was going to go on to kind of push him and make him this like, oh, well, my dad's like a billionaire now and all this kind of stuff, and kind of propel him. Unfortunately, I don't know if it is unfortunate, whatever, but Mr. Kennedy got a wellness violation right in the middle of this angle, which took him off TV and meant that they had to find a different kind of solution for this, which,
right,
when in doubt, fucking find Hornswoggle.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, why not? When you need some sort of ridiculous result and payoff because that all fucked up. I actually forgot about that, but was it Randy Orton who ultimately, I don't know if he got him fired, but it was Randy Orton who took umbrage to Kennedy because he wasn't a safe worker, I believe.
Mm.
And that was kind of the start of the demise for him. But that makes a bit of sense. I didn't realise that. But nevertheless, the Hornswoggle thing, had absolutely no payoff after that. I mean, it was ridiculous anyway. It kind of makes a bit more sense now that they didn't go anywhere with it. But, you know, a little Hornswoggle in a suit would have been funny for a while.
Well, yeah.
Right. You're going to have to educate people on this one, Carl, but I thought it needed a mention. And that was Mark Henry's hand baby.
Oh, God.
Now, this was slightly before my time, but I have seen the clips and it's fucked up. So, are you all right? Although it's one on my list, are you all right to regale with people how we got to this point? How we got to the point of a hand being given birth to?
I don't even know if I can educate people on this. I still don't know. So,
well, I know there was some belief that Mark Henry, he was going through his sexy Mark Henry phase, I believe, at this point, and he was making love to Mae Young, because that's an image he wants.
Mm-hmm.
And he got her pregnant, or so we thought. And ultimately, did they actually even show you the birth? I think they showed you the birth.
They did.
Not in that sense. It wasn't like, you know, full on like camera angle in the right place. You know, it was from an angle where you couldn't see anything of Mae Young, luckily. But anyway.
I think we all saw enough of fucking Mae Young at the Royal Rumble that year. Fucking hell.
There's an extra one for you guys. But yeah, so ultimately Mark's excited to be a new baby daddy, and she proceeds to give birth to a hand.
I'm sat here speechless because I have literally no idea. So
thought of this one?
Never mind
signing off on it. Who the fuck come up with that?
As well, the thing that makes it even like more like interesting is it was a white hand. they couldn't even go mixed race with it, you know what I mean? But
are we meant to believe that like a hand got stuck up there at some point, like some guy lost a hand, or
I have no idea
what the heck?
Honest to God, it makes zero sense. But you know, you're absolutely right, it was during his sexual chocolate gimmick, and he was quite the ladies man, and for whatever reason him and Mae Young became an item, and
the Mark wants what it wants.
Yeah. And yeah, so they go through all this, and they did show it, and it was this hand. And I believe at the time it was like, you know, there was like confetti and everything on it and stuff. Like, honestly, as crazy as it sounds. And they just didn't, yeah.
But doesn't need much more saying on it, but that's probably one of the craziest things that WWE have ever signed off on.
Do you know what? That was similar to what you were saying. That I remember on the 1,000th episode of Raw, they actually brought the hand back. As a grown-up hand. And it was literally just a guy with glasses on in like a hand costume. And Mae Young was just there. He's like, oh, you remember my son? And he was just like, hi.
That's fantastic.
It was literally, you know, the best payoff all these years later.
Yeah. It took decades, but we got the payoff.
Yeah. So I still to this day don't have any understanding of how or what they were trying to do with that, or where that even came from. I feel like that was one where they just went, I got no fucking idea, what about we just make it a hand? Okay.
Yeah. Because no, I don't even think that could have come from the depths of Vince McMahon's mind. That's just too all kinds of fucked up, that one.
Yeah, no idea.
So the next one, this was kind of weird for a number of reasons, and it was just the whole idea. So we had Billy Gunn come back with Chuck Palumbo as a tag team, Billy and Chuck. Do you remember Billy and Chuck?
I do.
I think the other, the manager was the guy with the sideburns, whose name escapes me, Rico. And so basically, they were never overtly a couple or gay, but they strongly suggested it. And the theme music strongly suggested it. So they were always very kind of homoerotic with each other, I suppose. And then they kept sort of building to this point where eventually they agree to get married. Or they're getting married in the ring, because, you know, marriages take place in the ring in WWE. And then it has a bit of a twofold sort of result here, that they're at the point of getting married, and it turns out that Billy was not on board with it, and he's not gay, as it turns out. And they were sort of being pushed into it by Rico, and they thought it was just like a gimmick thing. And they're like, wait, what? We're actually getting married? And then, in fact, am I mixing it up? Was this the Bischoff one? Am I thinking this right, or was Bischoff a different result? Because I want to mention Bischoff separately, if that's the one.
I remember Bischoff being the minister for someone, and he took the thing off, didn't he? It was to get back at Steph.
I'm going to mention that one separately, because that's going to be an honorary mention, but I might have merged the two, but that was fucked up just because I did not expect that. But but the whole I suppose this one I class as kind of a ridiculous story, not because of the whole gay thing. It was because of the way WWE were handling it. Like, oh, look how ridiculous this would be, gay wrestlers. And it's like, really? And yeah, the whole sort of idea behind them, I think, was just designed to maybe make people uncomfortable or something. I don't know. But as a gimmick, it was kind of crazy and weird. And yeah, Rico himself was kind of insane. Do you remember this tag team?
Yeah, I mean,
like, because it was, I suppose it was weird as well for us that it was Billy Gunn, you know.
Yeah,
what the hell? what happened, Billy?
It was definitely
you, an ass man.
Well, maybe he still was. but yeah, I do very, very much so remember this gimmick. And yeah, I mean, it was a really weird time. I mean, for Chuck Palumbo as well, he was he was quite big in ECW and WCW. He was like tag team champion with Sean O'Hare and stuff. And you know, it was definitely a weird gimmick change for both of them. But I still don't fully understand what the payoff was behind this. Like, why did they have to get married?
Do you know what? I think it was just a way for them to end the story. I don't think they knew where to go with it. The more I look at it, it was like they've gone, well, we'll get them married and then we'll get them going, oh, hang on, we're not going this far. And I think that was just their way of ending it. But I don't know. It felt like they had nowhere else to go with it and they thought, well, we'll just close it off on that. I'm just having a look at it now. I believe the Billy and Chuck thing did include Bischoff.
Okay.
Basically, the Bischoff thing I wanted to mention was the minister, or I want to say minister, the one conducting the ceremony for Gunn & Palumbo, was this old man. I think I want to mention it just because of how shocking it was, because the one officiating was this just seemingly old man, and I did not pick up on this at all.
It ended up being
Eric Bischoff in disguise. And then very weirdly, it had him reveal himself, and then it sort of span away really from them into, like you say, he added him for Stephanie McMahon, and it had I can't even remember quite what he said or how it went about, but it ended up involving the 3-minute warning. Do you remember 3-minute warning?
I do.
I bring a lot of memories back, and that led to an attack on Stephanie McMahon involving Chuck and Billy. But it sort of span away from their wedding ceremony, other than the shock of it being Bischoff, who was the priest in disguise, or the master of ceremonies or whatever in disguise. But it felt like just a weird way of ending their little sort of love story, as it were. But yeah, that shock as well of it being Bischoff. I was dead certain that was Bischoff, and I was like, am I merging two storylines in my head? But it was, he was the minister at that time. But fair play to him, that was a hell of a disguise. I honestly did not pick up on it at the time.
Yeah, me neither. Like, normally it's dead obvious, isn't it? And you're like, oh, of course it's... But, like, yeah, I remember going, holy shit, that's what Bischoff... I remember being properly shocked.
Indeed. And then the last one for me is just the concept of Santina Marella in general. And I wanted to mention this one because, admittedly, they handled it reasonably well, but Santina rocked up on the Women's Rumble this year. So I thought, I'll give it a mention. But back then, it was handled really poorly because essentially it was Santino deciding to try and get a bit of an advantage and completely denying it was him and claiming it was his sister, I believe, and entering the women's division. And he fought in a few different matches. I believe he held the women's title. I think it was still the women's title at that point. Mm-hmm. It might have been a Divas title, but I believe he held the title for a while as well. And it was just probably the most damaging thing for the women's division at the time. And luckily we're now nowhere near anything like that. You know, the women's division is a lot better than it was back then. But just the idea of Santina, just the idea of a perceived advantage because he's a man pretending to be a woman, so he's obviously going to be able to overpower the women, is such an antiquated concept now in this day and age anyway. But yeah, as a whole, the entire career of Santina Marella is just a fucked up storyline in itself.
Sure, gotcha.
But yeah, I don't know if you have any particular highlights for Santina, but for me, I just rolled my eyes every time.
I don't think there are any highlights. No. I think it's just a weird one, isn't it? Like, I remember the way Santino debuted was like quite a shock and stuff at the time. But then this whole Santina thing, like, I can't think of any single like highlight or good thing about it. It was just it was in poor taste at the time. And even in this year's Royal Rumble, I believe there was a few that weren't happy that, you know, he came back in it and stuff.
Yeah, I think there was some suggestion that there was a waste of a slot because that could have been a women's slot. But I think there was also some suggestion that they had to fill a gap because that was around the time Sasha Banks couldn't be there, because I think she'd suffered her injury at that point. So, you know, arguably it could have just been a last minute thing to fill a gap. But at the same time, I think we have discussed it on the Rumble Talk, but they did handle it reasonably well because it's not like he dominated anyone or had any advantage through doing it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's pretty much it for my five. Do we have any honourable mentions, or are you sort of set with that? I think we could go on forever with ridiculous storylines, to be fair, and we might revisit this topic again like once in the last decade or something along that line. But but that's our top 10 most ridiculous angles or storylines that we've ever seen. Right, and that is us for the week, I believe, Carl.
I believe it is.
Another fun-filled, action-packed, and also slightly somber A to the K Wrestle Talk. So remember, guys, you can catch us on all the social medias. Just search for A to the K Wrestle Talk. You can catch us now on YouTube. Again, A to the K Wrestle Talk. Like and subscribe and share. That would help us a lot. We're on anywhere you find podcasts, notably the Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Apple. And I think that is pretty much everywhere. Any others I've forgot there, Carl?
I think that's all of them.
Awesome. Right. So until next week, guys, we'll see you again.
Yeah, have a good one, guys.